Generation Goat number 32. I'm John Martin of Listen.com, and with me as always, E. Christopher Clark of Parts Unknown. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
How's it going?
You know, it's funny that you say the Parts Unknown, because yesterday I was at this thing, and I got this very cryptic, I'm mad at you from somebody.
Really? Was it me?
No,
it was not. I didn't go out yesterday.
It was not from you. It was from this guy, Chris, whose last name I can't pronounce, but he's better known as...
Maybe that's why the dude's mad.
Because my name's Chris?
No, because you can't remember his name.
No, I can't remember how to pronounce his last name. I know his last name, but he's more commonly known as Booge, which is the first part of his last name. Anyway, so Booge is part of this group, Stranger Than Fiction, that does improv comedy at the Players Ring in Portsmouth, among other places. And so Booge is waiting to go on to talk about Stranger Than Fiction, and I'm waiting to go on to talk about something that you and I can talk about in a few minutes.
But
Booge turns to me and he's whispering because somebody else is on. He's like, I'm mad at you. And then the other two people, he's joking, you know, the other two people are like, why are you mad at him? And he said, you know, he killed GF5, man. He killed GF5. So, yeah, damn. People are still upset at me about being from Parts Unknown now and not from Geek Force 5.
Well, that's good, right? Because... Yeah, pretty much nobody's noticed my webpage. It's just been quiet for a while.
I've noticed.
You've noticed, but only because I mention it, probably. So well done there. At least he wasn't really mad at you.
No. He was...
The last thing you want is to have to file a police report against a guy whose name you can't say.
Yeah. Like, Chris
I'd like to tell you who hit me, but...
But I can't say his name, man.
I can't, so... Yeah.
Yeah. So... It did get me thinking about the future of that website. Of course, I still own the domain name and,
right.
and whatever. And somewhere down the line, I think people like Booge and other people who are really passionate about it should somehow get them involved. Like
right.
I've always talked about the fact that I wanted it to be more of a community thing. And part of why I backed away is because I was having to do it all myself.
Mm-hmm.
If it ever comes back in the aftermath of that conversation, I was like, I need to get Booge involved.
You should just reform it and have the Geek Force 5 be actually five people. Or Geek Force 3,
right.
as the case may be, whoever you end up with.
And yeah.
Then that way you can do it. Like, I've been thinking about my massive backlog of submissions. I say this every time, but it gets bigger every time. And I keep thinking, like, I know a lot of people who are musically inclined. I really wish I could just say to them, hey, man, look, please, just go through this crap.
Right.
You know, and... It's not, you get the point, but, because I could really use some help. And there are a couple of people I might write to, and you're welcome to do it too, but, well, hey, at least somebody missed your site.
So. Yeah, no, it was nice. It was nice to hear that. And, of course I've been hearing it from afar, like the New Hampshire Media Makers meetings,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think there are people who still talk about it and still
Aww.
Talk about it. So,
You
yeah.
go to the meetings and they're like, Judas.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to a meeting in a long time.
It's like Dylan going electric. Judas.
I know, but well, and that's the thing is like, I have this website planned. And I just hope that they'll come to that. I don't know if they will though. That's
well, I can tell you from the server logs, you're certainly not moving very quickly on it.
No, so. I'm not at all. I just have a lot going on.
I hear you.
And I just
so
I don't.
Do I.
It's. I had this thought today, though, of, like, being so focused on what's coming next and so excited about what's coming next that I'm not thinking about what's happening right now.
Yeah.
But the problem is there's too many things happening right now, so I don't know which of them to focus on.
Yeah, I get that way, too. Like, I have a whole pile of short-term projects, which theoretically are all, like, 3 or 4 day projects that I could just, you know, knock out and be done. But the problem is when I start one, I think... Oh, but I've got all this stuff coming up.
Yeah.
I really should get prepared for the stuff coming up.
Right.
And then I get into that cycle, as I'm sure you know, of like,
yeah.
oh, I had all this stuff I was supposed to do and I didn't do it. Now what am I going to do?
I have revisions, the first set of revisions that my advanced fiction students
uh-huh.
did, and they turned them in a long time ago now at this point, and I have those to do. But,
yeah.
and of course, the E. Christopher Clark coding part of it, like in terms of getting it ready to just... accept content
right.
is probably like a half a day project, if that.
I'd help.
I
even saw a really cool HTML5 boilerplate site, which was like a really nice blank template.
I've seen a few of those. We should exchange.
We could work on it though,
because I mean, it's that is, like you say, a 4 to 5 day project. If I had 4 to 5 days to just sit there and work on this new site, I mean, I'm trying to get a little less ambitious about what I want it to be at launch versus what I want it to grow to be. Because I have these grand ambitions that every piece of writing and every blog post would be there at launch. And I think it's just kind of like...
Well, I think like picking a good feature and, you know, really making that strong to start and then like having a couple of little features is great. But because then your site has like automatic growth built in. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah. I think the blog part of it is probably the easiest and makes the most sense. And the reason why is that a lot of the existing content is already formatted and ready to be put into the blogging engine. But also, in terms of what I feel capable of doing, I could blog once a week. If I could carve out a couple hours, and I'm seeing our friend and rival RT on his onewordheadline.com posting things a couple times a week, and I'm like, man, I
could totally... But in fairness, most of those are really perverted. I'm assuming. I don't know.
They're not, actually. I mean, this is quite different stuff from what he's putting.
I know, yeah.
From what he's putting out on Waysiders. It's really interesting to read. He's doing a lot of talking about writing and reading and whatnot. And,
yeah, well, he was saying on Twitter not too long ago that, like, you know, he wants to just focus this year on, like, actually...
Yeah, and I'm inspired, and he's challenged me. He said, "Send me stuff," in the same way that you've said send me stuff. So you can tell him how successful that's been.
Yeah, don't hold your breath.
I'm kind of inspired to get going on it. And you know, the bigger parts of it, I'm not sure how complete they need to be at time of launch, but I sort of see that website tying into a couple of these projects I have coming up first thing in the summer to tie back to why I was at the
piano. Oh, right, yeah, that's true. There's death in your future.
There is death. There is a piano of death.
Right.
So the play that we did staged readings of this past winter, and we only did two of them, is now coming to the Players Ring for 6 nights in June and very early July. It ends on July 1st, so basically just June.
Right.
And it's going to play in the late night series, so full production. And I anticipate that Mary Cassiello, who did the music and performed the music, will be back. Although she's had a baby, so...
Damn it.
She says she's going to be back, but, you know, I understand...
Babies ruin everything.
I understand as a new parent, like, you want to get back to what you were doing, but it doesn't always happen.
Damn it.
But I anticipate she's going to be back. She says she will be.
Babies.
Anyway, so like there's that, and then I'm also doing, and I'm going to ask you to help me pronounce this, An Evening of Grand...
Oh, Guignol.
Yes, with John Herman and Brian White, where I'm contributing one of three scripts to this evening of short horror plays. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, if I could have the website launched, in time for that, I could do something very cool for... people who come to see both shows.
Apparently, Guignol, I was curious as to where this like unusual term came from. It seemed familiar, but apparently grows out of an 18th century French puppet show. So I had no idea, but apparently popular in Lyon and still performed in Paris. So anyway, sorry, I was curious. But
is there a difference between just the Guignol and Grand?
No.
No, okay.
Oh, wait. Yes, possibly. Théâtre de Grand Guignol is theater of the big puppet, as you would expect.
Right.
A theater in the Pigalle area in Paris, which is also famous for the Moulin Rouge, and opened at the end of the 19th century, closed in 1962, specialized in naturalistic horror shows. And now the term is used generally for graphic, amoral horror entertainment, popular from Elizabethan and Jacobean theater, like Titus Andronicus or Webster's White Devil.
Right.
So, anyway, okay, sorry. Bit of a digression, but I was really curious.
No, I'm glad you, because so that's what I'm faced with writing over the next couple weeks. Yeah, it's...
Seriously, people, go look at the Wikipedia entry for Grand Guignol, G-U-I-G-N-O-L. And there's photos from the 30s of people performing these, and it's awful.
It is awful. So, like last night was the season reveal for the Players Ring, which is why Booge was telling me he hated me and why I was there. So I did a reveal for Crossroads of the Piano of Death. And then immediately after that, because immediately after that in the season comes the evening of, they called me back out and they said, Chris, come on, you agreed to do this. And we had planned it out, but most of the audience had no idea that this was actually planned. This is the reaction I got afterwards. They said, Chris, come back out. So I timidly come back out onto the stage. And of course, the audience all knows John. He's pretty well known in the area. And right. they're getting to know me.
He's a bit bald.
Yeah, he's a bit bald. It's just hair's growing back pretty fast. They know me. I've started to perform there. They don't know Brian. Brian White runs cinemasuicide.com, and he is not a sort of known factor there.
He's a known unknown.
Yes.
Right.
John is in this sort of disheveled version of his tuxedo costume that he wears in a lot of things. Brian looks kind of like a Russian thug, and okay. I am still dressed nicely from my previous performance. So Brian then grabs me, slams me down into a chair, and John proceeds to pull out a very obviously stage knife and says, this is a stage knife, and he starts explaining what the evening is, the history of it. And then he says, so this is a stage knife, and he points at Brian and says, that is a real knife. And Brian takes out a butcher knife and puts it to my throat. And of course, I'm looking up at the ceiling for most of this, so I can't see the audience's reactions. But apparently, lots of hands covering mouths, and apparently afterwards, people concerned that I had no idea what was about to happen. He ends it by saying, all right, and just to show you that we mean business, we're actually going to draw blood. And they say, Chris, you agreed to this, right? And I timidly say, yeah, I guess. And they do a countdown, and they start counting down from 8. At 2, the plants in the audience all scream, and that gets everyone. And then at 1, he says, yeah, but we're not going to actually do it. We're going to, you know, tease you, and if you really need to experience this, you need to come to see the show. So
awesome.
It was very fun. My adrenaline was pumping like 3 or 4 hours later. Because here's the thing. Brian, not an actor, never been on stage before, was very nervous. He came off brilliantly. Everyone loved him.
Last thing you want to say, guy, 9 years are going shake, 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 shake.
So like everyone loved him, thought he did a brilliant job. So his nerves, you know, needn't have been there. But he had that thing convincingly pressed against my throat.
I would have never put you down for being slit open on stage is the way you were going to go out. Mm-hmm. I had you down for autoerotic asphyxiation. I got some new bets to take. Dude, that's scary.
Yeah. So I've got both of those things coming up in like the end of June and then into the beginning of July. We follow up Timon of Athens, which closes out the 20th season.
Not one of Shakespeare's better plays, but oh well.
Well, next season they revealed they're doing the Scottish play.
So, right. You know. That's okay.
Yeah.
Although, as you said, there's an inventive take on it.
There is. And I'm hard-pressed to describe exactly what it is. But the guy who's doing it is also directing The Odd Couple with our new favorite actor, Jamie Bradley, in one of the roles.
All right.
So he's got good... This director has great taste. He's directed some really good things there.
We can hope. As someone who studies English, and particularly early modern English, I must confess that when I hear the words, a brilliant new take on Shakespeare's classic,
right.
I tend to want to throw up a little bit. But... it could work. I mean, McKellen's Richard III is quite good, despite all the bizarro Nazi stuff. And, there have been others that...
Right.
Yeah, not the Branagh Hamlet, but...
Which we've talked about on this podcast.
Oh, it's so awful. After you talked about it, I went back and I tried to watch some of it. I got 20 minutes in, and I was just like, I'm done. This is so over the top. It's so pretentious.
I'm at that point in this semester where I'm really seriously thinking about... what I want to do next year. And one thing that I certainly think in terms of my theater, my drama unit, I hate that term.
It feels... Let's talk about your unit.
In terms of the drama section of the class, I'm like,
Is it a big unit?
It's bigger than yours, dude.
Okay. That's for you, 12-year-old guys. Let's go back to what I'm talking
about. I don't know that I want to do Hamlet again. I actually think, because they watch a couple of movies in the class, and that's not the same as going to see a play at all, that since the college does a piece of Shakespeare around that time anyway, here's the problem,
right,
of doing whatever the play that's going to be doing, like doing that as what we discuss, but I have no control over what that play is going to be, so yeah.
There are some really good new ones that have come out recently. Mm. I mean, the Ian McKellen Lear is amazing, and there's a PBS video of that that's out, and it's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And that was 2.5 hours, maybe, so it's not too long for a class.
Right.
It's perfect, I mean, as performances go. And then Patrick Stewart did Macbeth. I saw him do Macbeth in London, and there's a recording of that performance, which is also on Netflix. So you could always do that, too.
Yeah.
So those are fairly recent but good performances that you could do, or you could always do Much Ado, because that movie's quite fun.
I forget what they actually did. I mean, I'm tempted by the fact, since the college does a production, and I know it's not going to be a fantastic production because it's a college production, but they've picked some weird one. I forget what they picked this year. Last year was, Coriolanus. I think, was it Love's Labor's Lost? Ugh, I think last year was Love's Labor's Lost.
The only good thing about that play is the clown, and he's not around very much.
Yeah,
I mean, sorry, but that's just true.
I want to say this year was something a little bit more...
Oh, God, don't watch the movie of Love's
This year was
Love
Rich...
Labor Lost.
Really?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's a Branagh one.
It's a Branagh one. It's got Alicia Silverstone in it, and Matthew Lillard, and
my God.
15 minutes in, they danced the fucking Charleston. I'm not kidding.
All right,
just don't watch it. Unless you're high. Then watch
I think this year was Richard III, maybe?
Okay, well, that one's fun.
So, like, but that's the thing. Whoever makes that decision, it's one of the other people in the department who is also directing the play. Like, I trust her. I imagine she's going to pick good stuff, but I don't know I could teach what it would be. And in terms of ordering books and stuff, if it's one of the more obscure ones, it might not be in an anthology.
Oh, it'll be out there. I mean, they're all out there, and they're all singly printed by Penguin as well as part of the performance series.
Yeah.
I can certainly help you research any piece that there is, because I've done them all, but some of them are not fun.
No,
you don't want to be teaching Coriolanus or Two Gentlemen of Verona,
right?
Or, you know, Two Noble Kinsmen.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, there's a reason that Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet are the ones that are anthologized.
But if you're sick of those, I mean, you know, Lear's great, Hamlet, it's good for a class. The Tempest is my personal favorite. Mm-hmm. It was quite good in the springtime. Yeah, there's plenty of others.
Yeah, I'm just looking for a change next time, and trying to tie things in together a little bit, because I came to this realization that I have them watch the film Wonder Boys, but they don't read the novel Wonder Boys,
right.
And yet I find myself wanting to have a whole conversation about adaptation,
right? Because there's a whole lot more interaction with his wife.
Yeah, his ex-wife and the family. Yeah, it's all there. That whole middle section, which as I describe is very Jewish,
because
it's all right at Passover.
Right.
It's really interesting, and then the climax is very different. So. Yeah. I am also, as much as I love the book, kind of sick of teaching Middlesex, which is the novel I traditionally do.
Right.
So I thought, if I kind of went in, did Wonder Boys as the novel, showed Wonder Boys at the film as a transition into the theater section, or the drama section, and then got into one or two actual plays, one of which would be a Shakespeare that they could go see.
Hmm. I don't know. You could always replace Middlesex with Virgin Suicides and try that out.
Right.
Because that one's kind of... I enjoyed reading that more than Middlesex, but that's just my personal taste.
Yeah, no, I like Eugenides. I've heard mixed things about The Marriage Plot, which is his most recent one. But it seems like that's one that's... it feels like there's probably some sort of academic angle to it, because it's referring to a particular device from literature of the past. And every time I get into one of those where it's about... we were just discussing one in my advanced fiction class today stories about academics tend to drive me nuts because I've been an academic. I've been surrounded by academics, and it's like when you live that life, you kind of don't want to. It either hits too close to home, or it's too absurd, or it's just not that interesting.
It's true. I mean, they're either entertaining because you're like, I know some jackasses like that, right. Or it's very much like, I don't think it's funny, dude. I'm just trying to eat here. Yeah.
Well, there's the, it is tough. Yeah. The story that we read today, we were supposed to read, and it turns out, because many of my students are seniors, and they're at that point where if they're a paragraph into the story and it's not doing anything for them, they've got about 60 other high priority things.
Fuck them. That's when I pull out the quiz.
They're very good. They're very good on almost everything else, but there was this one story that almost none of them got all the way through.
Right.
And I came out and admitted, like, I understand, guys, the first paragraph of it was an academic story. It was about somebody picking up a book in England, and they're in the middle of their undergrad, thinking about their PhD.
And what's the story?
What is it called?
That doesn't matter.
Anyway, it's but it ends up charting this woman's entire growth from being a literature student through. I know, sounds terribly boring. It ended up being one of the most compelling stories in the collection.
Not a good premise, I'll tell you that much. It just doesn't have that certain something that would make me pull it up off the shelf.
Well, this book ends up weaving its way through. It's an obscure volume that she knows nothing about. She picks it up, and then it just keeps creeping back up.
Are there vampires?
There aren't vampires. I'm not selling it very well. But anyway,
is
so
the
I
book
mean
magical in any way? Does it transport her anywhere?
No, not to the magical kingdom of Landover or anything like that.
Well, I'll look at it.
I don't like those books where they're transported to... Well...
I don't know.
Sorry, I shouldn't say that. Modern books where they're transported to another land. Like, I never could get into Terry Brooks' Landover series in the same...
Those are terrible. I mean, Sword of Shannara is pretty good, but the Landover books are awful.
Yeah. I could never get into the Landover books in the same way I got into...
They're dreadful. I hear you.
You know what else...
But then again, you like Harry Potter. And come on, that's transported to another place.
I know, but it... I know. One other thing we were talking about today in the class, which I think you would find interesting, and you might have advice for this student. So she's writing, a lot of the students this semester have been writing, speculative fiction verging on science fiction. And she's got this concept, which is unimportant what the concept is, but the workshop was sort of like, we like what's going on story-wise, but this character and what this character's abilities are and background is unclear to us. And so one of her questions back to us when we finished the workshop was, how do you explain that stuff without over-explaining it? Because we've had conversations throughout the class about how... you and I have had this conversation about how Obi-Wan's explanation of the Force in A New Hope is perfect.
Doesn't need to be screwed with.
Doesn't need to be screwed with, right?
If you think midichlorians are a good idea, you and your children should be put to death. There, I've said it.
Similarly, Morpheus's description of the Matrix The Matrix is perfect, right?
Works just
so
fine.
Those are two of the ones I brought up, and I was trying to think of other places where a concept like that is spelled out in 30 seconds to a minute, and then you just move on with the narrative.
Right, but I mean, in both cases, what that problem comes down to is that the first time that somebody wrote those things, they said, how would the character explain it to another character, right? So they explained it from a character's point of view. So what does Morpheus need to tell Neo for Neo to get it? What he tells him.
Right.
What does Obi-Wan need to tell Luke? What he tells him. But then when they go back and they revise, like, you can see in the Star Wars prequels that George Lucas has this, like, obsession with trying to make it scientific, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the midichlorians. There's all kinds of other crap where he's trying to explain. Right. I saw an interview with him where he said, well, we don't put transporters and teleporters in there because we want everything to be grounded in science. Okay.
All right.
But, you know, it's the same thing with the Wachowski brothers when they go back and they start adding all that crap in about how the Matrix works and what are all the details.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, that's stuff you put in because you feel like, oh, we reached some audience the first time, but a lot of people were turned off because it sounded too out there. So we're going to try to reel them in with some, you know, some details that ground it somehow. And you just don't do that. I mean, there's that tendency, and I get it with my undergraduates when they write essays. They have an opinion, but they're they're not comfortable making an argument, so they give all this explanation about how they came to their opinion, and it's like, right. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just want to see the text that you're using, and then I want to read your argument. Like, I don't give a shit why you thought of it, or if you thought of it in the shower or on the toilet. I don't care.
Right.
You know, and I would say to that student, like, just explain it the way that they would explain it. Don't try to simultaneously explain it from the character's perspective and from the author's perspective, right. Which is what you do when you overdevelop an idea.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, to be fair, she's one of the most talented students in the class, and she's in a good place where narrative like plot wise everything's going fine, character wise everything's fine. It's just that the concept of whatever is different about this character is not coming across as well as it could be.
I think the best science fiction, you just show it, mm-hmm. you know, like you show them doing the thing, or you have a simple explanation. But I think the thing that makes bad science fiction bad is the same thing that makes you a bad liar when you're six.
Mm.
You know, when you're six and you're like, you break a window and your mom's like, what happened? Yeah. You're like, oh, well, I was sitting here and then I got up and I left the room and some ninjas came in the house and then they were fighting with my dad and my dad pulled out a gun and the ninjas took the gun and they shot the window. You know, it's a lot more stupid than just saying, like, some kids came by and they threw a rock at the house. Right. You know, but you don't think of that when you're six. Mm. And I think what makes bad science fiction bad is the tendency to, like, try to reel someone in. And it's so much less compelling than just a straight to the point kind of, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's what's fabulous. I've been rewatching the Lord of the Rings trilogy as I work at I'm watching it, which is maybe a bad way to watch it. In like half hour installments as I run in the morning, but I want something.
You better drop that attitude before next week when we go to the Avengers marathon.
I like having something to watch and it keeps my mind off of when I'm winded. I can focus a little bit more on what's going on.
Come on, if they can run up Weathertop, I can run a little bit more.
But like you think about how that whole thing is explained in the first 10 minutes, not even, of the first film. Yeah. Done. Like, there's this one ring, and
it does some stuff.
It does some stuff. It's all...
Go.
Go, yeah.
Yeah, and that's
and
all
if you
need.
Happen to know all of the rest of the stuff, like, great. But that's all you need to know is there's this one ring, and it's evil, and...
Right, and I mean, that's really the thing, too. Like, if you start off a piece of fiction explaining everything about it...
Yeah.
You lose all the sense of discovery. You lose that kind of magical, like, getting into it, you know, unraveling it thing. It's a perfectly normal tendency, particularly if you're pushing into a new genre.
Right.
Because you feel uncomfortable with the genre. Yeah. But I think you just have to kind of grab it and be like,
yeah,
you know, John turned into a giant sex robot, as he often does, and then move on. You don't have to, like, talk about, at that moment, all the stuff that led up to him being a sex robot. You just have to get on with it. You know, and get on with the getting on.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why so many great stories start in medias res. There's a reason why Iron Man starts with Tony in the desert and, you know, not with Tony as a little kid and how he ends up becoming the asshole that he is.
Yeah, and I mean, those details are useful and we see them, but we see them later.
Yeah, we see them when they're important.
Yeah.
The other side of that conversation was because she's writing linked short fiction, where... When it comes to putting these pieces out into the world on their own, how do you, and then bringing them back together, where's the balance between explaining a concept like that over and over and over again versus explaining it once, which is what you do if it's there in a book by itself?
This is kind of my problem with that technique. And I mean, I think that in general, if you're serializing something, which is really what linked short fiction is, it's what 19th century people would call serializing, then I think you just do it once. You know, because maybe you do them a favor. A lot of science fiction authors or fantasy authors will do you a favor, and in the back there'll be a glossary. And McCaffrey did that a lot. She had a glossary in her books, and that's a good way to go.
Yeah, because I think the alternate method is what J.K. Rowling does, which is for the first four Harry Potter books, we get these long, extended recaps of everything that's happened, and then of course the other flip side of that, and I actually referenced this in class today, is the Lost method, right. Which is actually kind of antagonistic toward the audience. Previously on Lost, here are three very quick scenes that have nothing to do with each other.
Anything,
but enjoy. And we're not sure how they connect. You know, they might not even have the same character. Right. One of them takes place in a jungle. One of them takes place on an airplane.
One of them is just the camera looking at a rock.
It's like, and if you're coming to it for the first time, you're like, what?
That was a scene from the Blair Witch Project. Fuck was that?
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So yeah,
that's a home sex tape. Clearly, that's Paris Hilton. What the hell?
You mentioned you mentioned something that made me think. I just made a movie.
That's true.
A short movie.
You did make a movie.
Involving
pancakes. Involving
pancakes,
but not whiskey.
Not whiskey. Yeah. Right. No, I made.
How'd it go?
It went very, very well. We shot it in a.
You guys were. Working with Ron Jeremy, is that right?
Yes, right. Yes. Ron Jeremy was the played my dad this time.
Nice.
You know.
Nice.
Yeah, Chuck Galley couldn't.
I met a random dude once named Ron Jeremy. He was just a random guy.
His name was Ron.
I just remember being like, "Wow, you must hate Googling yourself."
Yeah.
And then simultaneously be really jealous.
Right.
And then somewhat disgusted.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. So, yeah, no, it went well, and I wish I could remember what it was that you said.
Sorry.
That made me think of it, but it was, no, I lost it even before I mentioned that. You said something in the previous bit. Anyway, it was a lot of fun, and we, apparently it came out really well.
So when does one get to see the product of all of
that? I don't know. That's what I'm, like, that's the frustrating thing about film, I suppose, is it, well, not, I mean, it, but the great thing about it is once it's done, you can watch it as many times as you want once you've got your copy of it. But the frustrating thing is...
It's the waiting.
Yeah, the waiting.
For some jerk with Final Cut to be like, what does it do? Why did they take out all the features I like?
There's a... apparently, John Herman, who directed it, wrote it. He cut together the first minute or so to show it to the guy who's writing the music, and that it all looks fantastic. So...
Cool.
I think, I mean, there are lots of opportunities where it might come out. Certainly the New Hampshire Film Festival in the fall, I think it's the fall, would be a candidate, I think, if he can get a cut of it together for then.
Cool.
But of course he's about to go and be a finalist to go to space.
Yeah, so what happens with that? Does he have to go to, like, space camp?
He goes to Seattle for a series of physical and mental tests next week or the week after.
Awesome. And they'll be like, dude, you're, like, kind of bald and scary.
He's been working with a physical trainer. It's really crazy. Like, he was explaining it to me and Brian last night as we were preparing for our reveal of the evening of. And the stuff he's doing sounds intense.
Yeah, I mean, well, I imagine it would have to be, right? The New Hampshire Film Festival, by the way, is October 11th to the 14th this year.
Okay. So there's always a reason I've never gone before, but of course if I'm in one of the movies, then I think I might have to go.
I think you'd probably have to, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I'm still around, God forbid I don't get a real job, you know, I'll come and heckle.
Yeah, heckling's good.
Yeah.
What I will have a hard time doing is watching it as an audience member because not to like ruin the magic of the thing, I think it's going to be a very powerful film, but
I'll cover the microphone.
When we were doing close-ups on me, I was the last person to do my close-ups in the day. So by that point, Liz, who was playing the attendant, was there, but out of costume and just sort of feeding me lines as necessary.
Right.
And Chuck, who's playing the robot that's been imprinted with my character's father's likeness,
right,
is gone entirely, and I am sitting there delivering all of my angst and anger at, and the audience can't see this, at the little thing that holds up the microphone, or in this case, a light.
So now you know what it's like to act in a Star Wars prequel.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I'm when I see my own face sort of in close up yelling at Chuck, I'm going to know what's up.
And, yeah, but no one else will know except for the three people who listen to this.
So yeah, that's true.
We'll be all right.
Yeah.
But I'll tell everybody when we go. I'm like, yeah, Chris is actually delivering all those lines to a microphone stand, and they'll either be really impressed or they'll be like, oh, it shows.
Yeah. Oh, it shows.
Look at that.
Probably the latter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's cool, though. So, oh, well done, making a movie. I did not do anything last week. So, nicely done. I did not get my dream job, so hurrah for that.
I know, you told me, and I was very, very bummed.
It was kind of a bummer. Yeah, I think I stayed in bed for like a day. Like, I was just like, whatever, man. Life is pointless. Screw it. And I think I did. I did actually like lay in bed reading Camus. And I was just like, I don't care. I'm done.
But you got up.
But I did get up eventually because, you know, you can only like lay in your own urine for so long being hungry.
Yeah. So you can't drink your own urine unless you're Kevin Costner in Waterworld.
Yeah, you need to filter that. So it's tough. But, you know, you try to strain it through the pillow. Never mind. Doesn't matter. But. Yeah, I applied for some others, and there's some other cool jobs that are out there.
Right.
It's such an awful academic market, and this is where I just become a complete bummer, so I'll keep it short, but, like, realizing more and more that I just don't want an academic job anymore, like, I have so many friends who are coming up to a point where they're, like, you know, pursuing tenure or close to it.
Right.
And I was having this conversation earlier, like, there's this whole, for people who don't know, like, there's basically this whole publish or perish model in academia where...
Yep.
You know, you get a job and they say, okay, in 5 to 7 years, you'll have a tenure review. And by that time, we expect you to publish N books and, you know, Y periodicals. And we expect you to be at this many conferences. And
right.
And it's all about quantitative, right? Like, there's no qualitative component.
Right.
You know, someone we know who moved to Michigan who is not RT, she's coming up for her tenure review this year. And they're like, well, we think you should publish 2 more articles by October or else. And... You know, that's such a ridiculous thing because, like, the model is supposed to be that you as a scholar, you have an idea, it's a good idea, you write it out, you work on it, then you publish it.
Yeah.
But now it's just like, yeah, we gave you 5 years, just come up with anything and publish it so that we can say that people at our institution published this many articles in this time. And as a student, you've probably had this experience, listener, where you go to research something and there's 500 articles of crap on your subject and like one good article, and this is why, you know. Right. And it's such a turnoff, and like I keep looking at things to apply to, and some of them are great and some of them are very much like our expectation is that you'll be a productive researcher publishing this many things, like sometimes we'll even tell you, like, you know.
Yeah.
And it's such a turnoff. So I don't know, I'm considering new career directions, which you know, you at least have to get up and put pants on. But speaking of things which are definitely not productive, we are going to movies next week.
We are.
Without Andy Hicks, unfortunately. Although he did text us, thank you, Andy.
Yes.
And tell us that he was listening and that he missed us.
We're going to the Marvel thing next week.
Andy's response to that was they'll never get this geek stink out of the theater. Or I think he might have said nerd. But alas, it's true, but
well,
so our next goat might be post Avengers.
It might
in the car.
That would be
if we can make it work. That'll be a thing we do.
Because I think it'll be the sort of thing that we'll want to react to right away. I've heard mostly good things about it. Especially the second half.
Its Rotten Tomatoes score is like 98 or something.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like in Joss We Trust, I suppose.
Yeah. Which is why we may go see Cabin in the Woods with Hicks.
Yes, yeah, that would be a good one. Because I've heard very good things about that. And that, apparently, I was just reading an interview this afternoon. Hemsworth, who plays Thor, made Cabin in the Woods before he was cast as Thor. And
there's a lot of Joss alums in it as well. And as well in the Avengers, there's some nice cameos.
So. Yeah. It's
which we shouldn't spoil for people. But no.
I'm very much looking forward to it. And I think it's... I don't know. I mean, I think it will... It'll start off a very good summer season and rest of the year in terms of movies. Of course, after that, you've got Dark Knight, which we know we're not worried about. Apparently, the guys who saw it at CinemaCon or saw some sizzle footage at CinemaCon say...
Apparently, they fixed Bane's
voice. Bane's voice has been fixed. They're like, we are not going to deny it anymore. Bane's voice has been fixed.
But hey, whatever. You know, I'm still feeling good about it.
And apparently, there's a new trailer that might be attached to Avengers, which seems really weird because... Warner Brothers and Disney, DC and Marvel.
I saw that. I also saw that there might be a new Hobbit trailer, or the first Hobbit trailer might be around the Avengers as well.
Yeah, so. That would be Well, and of course, the thing with The Hobbit that happened out of CinemaCon, the same place where the Dark Knight news came out, was, well, we already knew it was being shot in 48 frames a second, which for the people who don't know is twice the normal, or not normal, but twice that.
Which means, you know, more detail, less motion blurring, more light and shading, you know, all sorts of yummy things.
Yeah, so there was lots of controversy coming out about it based on what they saw. The reactions I heard were kind of like the wide shots of the landscape that you saw, like you saw in Lord of the Rings, are even more intense and more beautiful than ever. But that the close-ups, this is what they were complaining about. Obviously, I haven't seen it. That the close-ups, the action scenes, were where the 48 frames felt weird because you ended up seeing people who were very obviously wearing makeup, people who were, you know.
But they do a lot of post-production on those. I mean, they spent a year doing digital grading and other things on the first films. And I think those are things that maybe aren't quite finished yet.
Yeah. So, they said there was no color correction on them.
Right.
Know,
so
like
I'm
that,
not worried about it. You know, I think it'll be fine. I mean, they made three really great movies. And I don't think that Peter Jackson would, you know, be looking at this with the same eyes and going, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and Cameron has also said, you know, when he's not mining asteroids, that he's going to shoot the next two Avatar films in either 48 or 60 frames a second.
Right.
So, and it's funny because, like, gamers will be like, yeah, more frames a second is good, but everybody else must be kind of like, but why?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think the, I still trust him. And as I said, I'm rewatching all the movies now, the extended editions, and I'm just marveling at how great they are. Especially it seems like a weird way to watch them, but in like half hour chunks, it's even more.
You just need to do a 14-hour workout.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. And then you could like not exercise for 2 months.
I did walk for 12 miles the other day.
Dude,
but that
why?
Was like a three, four hour workout.
That's a long walk.
Yeah. You should, I posted,
I would really like to go for a long walk.
I posted a link on Facebook. Yeah. And maybe Twitter as well, of a map of the route I took. And I didn't realize how insane it looks, because if you look at the map, and those of you who know Cambridge, Massachusetts, you'll appreciate this. Those of you who don't, I'm sorry, I'll be done quickly. I started on the I started somewhere between Porter and Harvard Square. Walked a little bit outside of that to the campus library, and then so starting from Brattle Street just outside of Harvard Square, walked all the way down to the Mass Ave Bridge, walked across the Mass Ave Bridge, took a left on the Boston side, and walked along the river towards the Museum of Science. Got all the way to Museum of Science, crossed back over the river at the Museum of Science, and then headed back headed back west along the river on the Cambridge side. When I got to Mass Ave, I thought, okay, now I can turn and just go back the way I came. And I said, or I could just keep walking. So I felt like Forrest Gump. I was like, I could just keep going. So I kept walking up along the river until I got to the Harvard.
One day Generation Gate's going to end because Crystal just walked to, like, Utah.
Sorry,
guys.
And then, so I walked, I got back to Harvard.
Worked for some sort of fruit company. Yeah, that'll be rough.
That would be rough.
What can you do? But if you do that, you know, maybe you could phone in.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I got Skype on my phone.
I would love to go for a long walk, and I would even ask you to go, but you always want to go at like 4 in the morning. Like, I see it on Facebook when I wake up, Chris went for a walk at 5 this morning. And I'm like, why?
Because it's the only time.
Why?
Because I have two jobs and I get up really early.
Dude, no. Yeah. Just no. There are coyotes out at that hour.
There are coyotes. Most of the stuff I do in the morning is in the house.
Yeah. Oh, so it lies?
No.
Well, I went for a 3-mile hike and it was like in your living room?
I use the walk run indoors thing, and basically it's me running back and forth in the living room.
So that thing's full of crap?
It's not full of crap. I am running that far.
That's so much less romantic. I kind of imagined you, like, actually out walking around.
I mean, I do most of the long, long walks.
I mean, all right. Some of my clues should have been that it occurred in winter. But I thought you were just hardcore now.
No, I'm not hardcore. John Herman, Brian White, they're the hardcore people I know, not me.
Damn it.
Yeah, John's training for space. Brian trains for this thing called Tough Mudder.
Oh, yeah. Somebody else we know, Tony.
Yeah, so I...
It scares me.
Not for me. I like the walking.
So, when do we know if John gets to go into orbit or not?
I don't know. See, he's going out to Seattle in... it's either next week or the week after. And I think they spend a week there where they eliminate the 7 people down to and bring it down to 1.
Wow.
So
that's nuts.
Yeah.
Is it like going to be a reality show while he's there?
Well, they did. Apparently they did tell him.
Like it's somehow like a cooking competition as well.
No, I don't think it's actually a reality show, but I think he was advised to watch something like The Amazing Race or something like that. Mm.
Today's Quickfire, we're going to put you in the centrifuge. Hooray! Wow, that's nuts, man.
Yeah. But, you know, look at me trying to make a ham-fisted transition and stopping halfway through.
Do we have another kind on the show?
We don't, no. I was going to say, getting to the bottom of our
I'm
list.
I'm looking at the list, what you were going to say. I'm going to predict what you were going to say as a transition. But the best workout I get these days is playing Rock Band.
That's not exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, you know, speaking of things that we should try, you know, you want to go for a walk. You have told the listener and me that you've never played Rock Band.
I've never played Rock Band or Guitar Hero.
And the aforementioned Hare Hicks, he actually asked me on Facebook. He's like, you know what, next time the Wii servers are up, let's play some Rock Band.
But he didn't ask me. He asked you.
But he didn't know that you had Rock Band.
So what?
I
get to be the Rock Band groupie?
No, I've got the...
Is there a mode for that?
No. I've got the microphone, and I've got the keytar, or the keyboard. So you can take your pick.
I don't understand. How does the microphone part work? I understand that, like, on the keytar and other things, like, you press little colored buttons in time with the thing on the screen, but what does it judge with the microphone?
So the microphone, it is judging pitch, but it's judging pitch relative to where...
So don't do Guns N' Roses, is what you're saying.
Yeah, probably not. Famous Queen song, Wayne's World.
Right, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody, thank you. Oh my god, my brain... Bohemian Rhapsody is one of the more difficult songs in there because it's got all the various vocal parts.
Right.
So it judges based on where you start off, and then if you hit the intervals right, and if you're, it even can tell, okay. It seems like, if you're sharp or flat, so it will...
Interesting.
And depending on which level you're at, if you're at easy, medium, hard, or extreme, or whatever the other one is.
Extreme.
It will judge based on...
Is that with a capital X?
Yes.
That's pretty sad.
No, it's with an E, you know, and there's Gary Cherone, and he's... No. Dated reference.
Wow. All right, well, yeah, I'll try it. You know, as long as I'm invited. Yeah. If you guys want to reform a Rock Band without me.
We should, you know, speaking of Rock Band, we should open up a garage band jam session someday with our eye devices and...
That would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, well, we would need the help of a non-real instrument. Andy could probably play a real one.
Yeah. But whatever, man. Mine's hipster friendly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Let's do that. So, anything interesting going on soon?
Well, no. I mean,
we are going to the Marvel Marathon.
Marvel Marathon,
which apparently there are still tickets left. Who would have thought?
Are there for the?
Who would have thought, man, on a Thursday for $40, starting at 11:30 in the morning and ending after midnight? Who would have thought there are still tickets?
I thought they were all sold out.
No, no, no. Because I sent the link to Andy saying, hey, there are still tickets. Because I checked.
Wow.
He was like, no, you suck.
Weird. So,
yeah, who would have thought? There's still tickets. Listener, if you want to come and see us watch movies all day long.
There will be...
I hope there's an intermission.
There's got to be. There's 2.5 hours of unaccounted for time.
I'm just going to get a big popcorn bucket in case I need to pee. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I mean, aside from that, like, the website eventually, the plays, sooner than that, maybe.
Nice. Yeah, because you have like a really busy month going on.
I mean, so I got the deadline for the evening of, I got to get that script done in a couple weeks. I got to cast the Piano of Death, recast it, because all the actors who played the parts in the stage readings are Boston-based.
Well, you should ask them.
The feelers are out to them. I just don't, I'm anticipating they're not going to be able to do it. If they are, great. You know, awesome. They already know the characters, they already know the lines, but gotta prepare. I mean, it's so close. It's like, I gotta have contingencies for everything. Just like I said, Mary says she's going to be able to do it, but I gotta think about a contingency just in case. I know.
Damn it.
I don't think I really have to worry there. I think Mary really wants to do it, and she'll find a way. But yeah, so like, there's that. Even before I'm done with this semester, one of my summer classes starts. So like, my semester isn't even done yet. My first summer class starts on Monday. Before God I'm even damn, done dude. With classes.
I've got finals next week, and I think my first summer class starts. Actually, I've got it right here. My first summer class starts 5/21. Mm-hmm. So I've actually got a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think my second summer class actually starts the night that my or starts the afternoon of the night that my play opens. Awesome. Now that I'm thinking about it, that'll be a fun day.
Hopefully it's like an earlier class and you're it's 1 to 3:30.
So, but the plays, the evening of play, or so all the whole summer season starts at 10 p.m. Right. Although among my crazy ideas, and listener, if any of you are, musicians, I may want to talk to you, because, I have some crazy ideas for how music could work in, cause it's a show about music, a show about art, and, I think opening acts and whatnot would not necessarily be inappropriate. So
cool.
Maybe some hallway buskers.
Song about Hot Pockets, perhaps.
That would be fantastic. I'm gonna have to pitch said gentleman who likes to sing about Hot Pockets. I actually went to a karaoke bar with said gentleman, and he was amazing.
Karaoke, huh?
Yeah, in Hampton.
Wow.
Yeah. Among
the, that's as enthusiastic as I get to a karaoke.
So how did they get me there? This is after the Spotlight Awards, which are for the New Hampshire art scene.
Were you really drunk?
I was not really drunk. I did not drink all night. In fact, everyone else did, but not me. The way they convinced me to go out, even though I had class the next day, was, Chris, you need to come. You will write a story about this place, and it is true.
They suckered you with that before.
Some of the people who were there, I would just say this. There was a woman who sings at this place who takes off her oxygen mask to sing. So she takes the oxygen mask off.
Why do I have a really uncomfortable feeling that she's also a stripper?
I don't think she's also a stripper, although they think there was somebody there who might have been.
Wow. The last time I went to karaoke, I also got forced to go. I didn't want to go. A bunch of friends that I was an undergraduate with called me up and were like, hey, we're all going to eat tonight, so you want to eat? And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. I haven't seen you guys in a while. And we get to this place. And the outside screamed, don't go in. For those of you who maybe know Greater Nashua.
Halua.
The Halua.
Yeah. I remember this night. You invited me to come.
I'm so glad you didn't come.
I think I did come for the beginning part of it, and then I abandoned
it. I honestly can't remember. I've blocked most of that night out of my hand. But it was like, it's a quote Polynesian place, which is like one of those weird, like, we serve Chinese food, but we're calling it Polynesian because we also have, like, I don't know, poi. And
as if poi was a reason to go in eat anywhere.
But all the food tasted exactly the same, and it tasted like bad beer. Like, the rice, the meat, everything tasted same.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit disturbing to begin with, but they had karaoke as well, and it was...
As they generally do at Chinese and Polynesian restaurants.
It was terrible, man. It was just, like, the worst experience ever. Like, all the singing was terrible, and there was, like, one guy who had groupies, which was a little uncomfortable, because he sucked.
This karaoke place in Hampton, almost everybody was fantastic.
Well, okay. Maybe they
Which
exist.
Is really weird.
But I've kind of...
No, you're right. Most of them, they stink.
Yeah.
This place, I was just
blown away. Well, then I don't want to go there either, because then I'd be like pulling the curve down. Like, I think the only time I'm ever going to do it again, like, this is a promise, is if we find one of those places, like, in Lost in Translation, where it's, like, the booth that's closed, and it's, like, you and your friends, and
right. You're all really drunk. There is a place in Alston where we went for a Rob K. I won't say his last name in case I could get him in trouble. But, yeah, his bachelor party.
I would go to that.
That it's in Alston. It was fun.
Especially if Scarlett Johansson comes and sings, because it'll be just like the movie, and it'll be like, wow. Yeah. Oh, and Snoopy comes and does God Save the Queen, because holy crap, that was awesome.
Now I gotta go rewatch that movie.
That actually, I think, is probably one of my two favorite moments in that whole movie, was just that Japanese guy busting out God Save the Queen. It's awesome.
And now we know what we end the show with.
That's right.
If we can find it.
I think I might have it. All right, well, cool. So that's a goat, I guess.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for a book chat.
Yes.
And I don't know, the next goat, you know, if we can work it out, will be post-Avengers.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
So we'll be in a car full of sugar and referring and spoiling a movie that you haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
So don't listen.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
And see you later, Chris.
See ya.